This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff. RAF gives the world's top wrestlers the stage they earned but never had until now.
Living with schizophrenia isn't easy, especially when you're not getting relief from some of your symptoms. It can be hard when you're still dealing with symptoms, like hearing voices or seeing things that aren't there. And negative symptoms, like feeling unmotivated or avoiding social situations. If this sounds familiar, it might be time to talk to your healthcare provider and explore a different kind of schizophrenia treatment. Discover your possibilities at treatingscz.com.
Hi, well, welcome to One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Welcome to Sunday, I should say, and maybe the end of your weekend. What a great show we have for you today. We have Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister of the UK, on the perception of the president and beyond once he was overseas. Now he's back. Jim Lampley might be the best sportscaster of my generation. He's going to talk about his illustrious career and where we go from here in sports. And Jimmy Failor, whatever's on his mind is going to be good enough for this show. But first, the fastest, most impactful monologue in America. The theme this week, winning is allowed, just not acknowledged when it comes to that guy. At least not in President Trump's case when it comes to the media. Case in point, the unprecedented trade deals, rebalancing our commerce and bringing in billions of dollars. Trump's trade team has the U.S. opening up access for American cars in Europe and Japan. I didn't think that was going to happen. Our farmers are actually allowed to sell rice for the first time ever in Japan. No one thought that would happen. The European Union will now have the United States as their number one supplier of natural gas. And then there's flat out straight revenue. The deal with South Korea, how about $350 billion and up? Just goes into what could be a sovereign wealth fund like Japan. Same thing, $550 billion. Now the EU pledging to make a $750 billion strategic purchases. We'll see how that goes, along with $600 billion in additional money. It's going to help get jobs, keep our economy going. Now, some countries are getting hit harder if they didn't do a deal. Here are some of the highest rates in the world. That's just unless they adjust suddenly. We have 15 to 20% mark across the board. Some of the bigger ones, you got Syria, Laos, Burma, Switzerland. And don't forget Canada. We're in a bit of a war with our neighbor. It's up around 35% in terms of tariffs. We'll see if they can work that out. Now, the economy is robust. The GDP, about 3%, despite the tariff fears. Wages growing at 4.4% in the private sector. These are great numbers. While job numbers this month were not great, the Fed is expected to act now and fix it all in September. But most of the media will not acknowledge the momentum. Check out some of these headlines. I mean, spinning every good thing Trump does to something negative. For example, the U.S. economy rebounds to 3% growth, right, in the second quarter. But tariffs skew the picture. CNN, how about this? Big rebound in GDP. Masks, hidden weakness in the U.S. economy. Really? Hidden? Is there anything hidden in the Trump administration? AP, along with the strong second quarter rebound for the U.S. economy, some red flags. Dun, 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 dun. You think the trade, the horrific headlines, if you look at the trade in April, when everyone thought the sky was falling, would at least be fairly positive when it didn't fall in July, especially now that we're in August. Why can't Democrats admit when they are wrong?
You told me it was the right thing to do.
Look, I know what I told you to do, but when I told you to do that, I was wrong. Ralph, I was wrong.
Even a New York columnist, Bret Stephens, who has been a longtime critic of President Trump, admits Trump has been much more successful than he expected this time. So let's compare Trump's triumphs to the perceived President Biden's successes. Flashback time to the headlines. On the American Rescue Plan, March of 2021, where were you when you saw this? Joe Biden is a transformational president. Experts would later say he fueled massive inflation, but I don't want to slow you down. On the Inflation Reduction Act, quote, a victory for Biden and a bet on America's future. And aside, all a lie was really the new Green Deal. It didn't touch inflation. And you can't forget this one. Did Democrats just save civilization? Does anyone see the difference here? All I'm asking is for the media to be somewhat fair. The tariffs did not crush the economy or ignite a trade war. Even China and the U.S. delegation seem to be heading towards an agreement. I got to give credit to Bill Maher for acknowledging the sky didn't fall.
The economy was going to be tanked, but that didn't happen. The stock market is at record highs. I don't see a country in a depression at all. And I would have thought, and I got to own it, that these tariffs were going to sink this economy by this time, and they didn't.
So Bill Maher admitted he was wrong. What about the Fonz?
You mean you were wrong?
Yeah, that's right, Malfa. I was what you just said I was just then, yeah.
Wrong? The Fonz wrong?
Malf, look. There is a first time for everything, huh?
Yes, Ralph Malf couldn't handle it. Joining us now to expand is editor-in-chief of Racket News. You get him on Substack and everywhere else. His podcast is great. Matt Taibbi. Matt, I'm not saying they should be so nice to Trump. He doesn't walk on water. But can we expect some fairness the second time around?
No, absolutely not. I mean, one of the problems is that the press has covered Trump in a way that has left them no ability to cover him objectively without admitting massive previous failures and corruption, specifically with all the stuff that's come out about Russiagate and some other scandals.
Yeah, let's talk about Russiagate. You said in your latest column on Racket News, you said you were reluctant to dive into the so-called conspiracy. What changed for you? Was it something in the Durham annex and the whistleblowers over the last week?
Yeah, I mean, I've been covering this story for 8 years, and I started out just saying something seemed wrong with the reporting, like the sourcing was bad. And I thought it was a story about a thin investigation that wasn't supported well enough. And I was very reluctant to go to this place that this was a conspiracy to cover up something that Hillary Clinton had done. But the Durham report really leaves no doubt anymore that the Clinton campaign had a plan in place to blame Trump on with something related to Russia even before the WikiLeaks stuff came out. So the administration that the investigation that followed was just incidental, and that's pretty well demonstrated by what happened in the report.
And the thing is, now you have this guy Leonardo Bernardo, a name with George Soros's Open Society, Jeff Goldstein, dealing with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, back and forth and finding a way to change the narrative from Hillary's emails and the John Podesta hacking to Donald Trump in bed with Vladimir Putin to hopefully win the election and later to destroy his first term when he won.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable because the real story here is that Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server opened up the United States to an unprecedented security risk, and the Russian government actually came into possession of a huge cache of material, correspondence all the way up to the president's office. And yet, in order to deflect from that, they had to create some kind of story that was similarly explosive. So they came up with this idea of linking and vilifying Trump and Putin together. They talked about it being a long-term project to demonize them both. And that's what they did. And what's so remarkable is that every single major media reporter in America went along with this, this station excluded, obviously.
Matt, if it wasn't for a compliant media, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been a bunch of intelligence officials making statements. But the media was stenographers for this story. And it ruins people's lives. Michael Flynn, Paul Manafort, solitary confinement. They almost arrested Jared Kushner. This goes all the way through, but a lot of people are saying we've been through this. What's different is in this annex, in these burn bags that were found in the FBI. But the New York Times on Friday comes out and just show this headline, because you tackle this in your column. They basically say, could it be that the information that Matt Taibbi and Brian Kilmeade are talking about right now is Russian disinformation and it wasn't them? So if you could stay with this, can you buy that? Do you think the Russians are duping us?
No. There's no question that they had an enormous amount of material. It was taken seriously enough by James Comey that he moved up the date of his announcement of the end of Hillary Clinton's email investigation. And the denials that the New York Times is writing about today, and I'm just so exhausted by this process, Brian.
I know.
Every time they come out with some new cockamamie thing, and we have to take time to knock it all down again, and eventually it's admitted later. But these are non-denial denials. They talk about it being put together by spies, and the people who are mentioned in the story, they say they don't recall it happening. But if you actually look at what they say in these interviews, they say things like, yeah, I don't remember doing that, but it's possible that I proposed that kind of plan. And it's possible that if I proposed it, it would have been accepted by the campaign. It's embarrassing.
Lastly, in the conclusion, people want to see some type of consequences for this unsavory action. If we talk about consequences, note there's a statute of limitations. What do you expect?
Well, I don't know. I think that's the last remaining mystery in all this. I know from talking to people who are close to all these investigations that they're not doing this as part of any kind of hearts and minds campaign. They don't expect that the press is going to suddenly stop on a dime and make their case to the American people. They're doing this for a reason, and they're doing it to make cases. That we know that there are criminal referrals that have been made, investigations have been started. We just don't know exactly what they're going to charge. It's going to be some kind of conspiracy case, but conspiracy to do what exactly isn't clear. But the evidence is abundant, and they've completely exploded the myth of Russiagate at this point.
And if people want to know the latest, just cut through it all, follow Matt Taibbi on Substack, on Racket News. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Brian.
I think they made a good deal. I think we all made a good deal. But Europe has a big immigration problem. But they also liked when I said that they have one of the worst mayors anywhere in the world in London. He's a horrible mayor, nasty guy, stupid guy, in my opinion. I think windmills are a disgrace. I think they hurt everything they touch. They're ugly. They're very inefficient. What they should do is open up the... You know, the whole North Coast oil. They have tremendous oil right there, right where we play.
So President Trump reflecting on parts of his trip to Scotland, discussing his new trade deal, taking aim at the London mayor and urging Europe to ditch windmills. That's what he was talking about. He said ugly in favor of drilling in the North Sea. During the visit, he announced a new trade agreement with the European Union and met with the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer. They look like buddies. And Scotland's First Minister John Swinney. The discussions covered key issues, including whiskey tariffs and the growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. So how was the president received during his trip on the world stage? They certainly didn't know what to make of him the first time around. I got a great guest, former UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, great personalities over in Europe and here. He would be even more successful in American politics. Mr. Prime Minister, welcome. Can you give me an idea of how the president was received when he was there and once he left?
Well, it's great to be on your show again, Brian. And listen, as far as I could tell, he got a hero's reception from people in Scotland. People in the street were very glad to see him. They turned out with loving placards. And, you know, the thing that people love about Donald Trump is the way he just tears up all the rules of diplomacy. Because when you come to somebody else's country, you're going to stand there and just sort of say a few platitudes about how great it is to be there. You're not meant to criticize the government of your host. And yet, of course, that's what he did. And he tore into Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, quite rightly, in my view. He tore into
windmills,
illegal immigration coming across the channel. That's absolutely right, because Starmer, the UK prime minister, got rid of a very good plan that we had to send migrants back. And, you know, I think that people just find it refreshing to listen to somebody coming to their own country and for once not mincing their words.
I know you tried to get that trade deal done once you guys did Brexit. And are you, from the UK perspective, are you happy with the deal as you know it between the UK and the US?
Well, look, Brian, I don't think there should be any tariffs between the UK and the US. I think it's absolutely nonsensical. But thanks to Brexit, which you won't hear from the New York Times, which you won't hear from the BBC or the Financial Times or the Washington Post. Thanks to Brexit, we did a deal that was substantially better than the European Union. And look, what I would love to see one day, and I think Donald Trump is the kind of guy who could do this, is an agreement that brings together the great Western democracies, brings together the United States and North America with Europe. These are the great markets of our civilization. Right. These are where people want to be. Bring them together. That's the way to stand up to China. That's the way to stand up to China.
Gotcha. All right. So let's talk about what Canada, France, and the UK is thinking about doing. They plan on recognizing a Palestinian state because they're not happy with the situation in Gaza. No one should be. For me, it's obvious who's to blame, though. It's Hamas. So I had Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Yes, Marco Rubio on the radio show, which you were on. And here's what he said about this.
It's annoying to some, but it's irrelevant. It doesn't mean anything. First of all, none of these countries have the ability to create a Palestinian state. There can be no Palestinian state unless Israel agrees to it. Number two, they can't even tell you where this Palestinian state is. They can't tell you who will govern it.
Do you agree with the Secretary of State?
I do completely. I think that what Marco Rubio said was 100% right. This is just pissing in the wind, if I can be vulgar.
Yes, you can.
For a second, by France and the UK. There's a thing called the Montevideo Convention of 1933 that governs the way we in the UK recognize states. And to recognize a state, you have to agree on the boundaries of that state, and you have to agree that that state has a government that can control those boundaries. Plainly, the boundaries of the so-called Palestinian state are very, very much contested. And secondly, at least part of that potential state is controlled by a psychotic Islamo-fascist death cult called Hamas, right? And why on earth the UK government should be extending this path of recognition to Hamas right now, I simply cannot imagine.
I hear you. Mr. Prime Minister, one other thing you're passionate about, you were the first leader to go to Ukraine after the invasion and to believe in Zelensky. I know you believe in his cause, and the way they fight is certainly inspiring. And it's the President of the United States has had it with Vladimir Putin. Within 10 days, we're going to make a decision on some massive sanctions and maybe more arms. What do you think is going to happen between now and then?
Look, I think what we've seen in the White House is a wonderful understanding of the reality of Putin's intentions towards Ukraine. And you know, just listening to you and Matt Taibbi just now, it was a really interesting exchange because there's no doubt that the Russiagate stuff had a big psychological impact on President Trump and his team. And they thought it was a load of nonsense. So they were more sympathetic to Putin than I think they needed to be. I reckon the president now understands that Putin is bent on the total subjugation of Ukraine. There's one man who can stop that, one man who is going to stop that, and that's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And I have real confidence that he can pull this thing off. I really do. He's going to get tougher.
I hear you. And I just don't think Putin's going to stop. We just have to figure out somehow make him stop. Okay. And China might be the key. And they want a trade deal with us, and maybe that's going to come up. But you're the diplomat. You're the expert on government. Mr. Prime Minister, great to see you. I think the world needs your personality out there, so hopefully you'll make a comeback. Meanwhile, straight ahead on this show, Zoran Mamdani's socialist policies threatening to destroy businesses in New York City and beyond. It's so much more than the New York story. The real impact with Larry Kudlow and John Katsimatidis. And still to come, legendary sportscaster Jim Lampley has seen it all in the ring and beyond. More on him, his career, and where sports is going. And catch me on stage. History, Liberty, and Laughs. Streamed on Fox Nation, but you got to be there in person. Matt meets me in person. Matt, you know how special I am. August 23rd, Dallas, Texas. Richmond, Virginia, September 27th. BrianKilmeade.com. Don't move.
I will create a network of city-owned grocery stores. It's like a public option for produce.
I'll freeze the rent for millions of tenants, make buses fast and free, and deliver universal childcare. And before you ask, I'll pay for it by taxing the rich.
Yes, thank goodness. Scary, pretty, right? New York City mayoral candidate Zoran Mamdani leading the pack. He has the entire city bracing for impact as his socialist, dare I say, Marxist policies are threatening business leaders across all five boroughs. But they've been pretty much quiet.
And what's even scarier, in my view, is despite his attempt to destroy the city, if he goes ahead and gets elected, as we know it, he's leading against all other candidates. 50, 22, Sleet with 13, Adams in single digits. Joining us right now, a few gentlemen that care a lot about this city and have a lot to do with its success. It is the CEO of the chain, Christides, as well as DiGagostino's, as well as Red Apple Media, John Castamatidis, and the host of Kudlow on Fox Business, Larry Kudlow.
D'Agostino's.
Yeah, what was I saying? Larry, yes, your thought right now about why this guy is leading with knowing what we know about him.
Well, I think he ran a great campaign, and the others did in the Democratic primary. And I think he's ahead. If the election were today, he would win, okay? But, because of all the extremist socialist views you were describing, plus his anti-Semitism, and he's going to have a lot of trouble with Donald Trump as well. As people get to know what he really believes, yeah. I mean, he's trying to weasel his way out now. Can't do it. It's not. Statements have been there, not just in the mayoral campaign. Don't forget, he was a state assemblyman for several terms, espousing the same policies of taxing the rich and defunding the police and anti-Semitism. So my point is, let's see what happens over the summer. The numbers aren't quite as bad. I have a poll here that's actually a little better from Mark Halperin. Let's see what happens here. But you will see tremendous. Look, I had the Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, was on my show last night. I asked him about this. Howard is a longtime New Yorker. And Donald Trump will withhold money from New York.
If he wins.
If he starts to defund the police, if he doesn't let the ICE people come in and get the criminals, right. The worst of the worst, he's going to have Trump to contend with.
And everyone loses as they fight it out. John, you own not only doing grocery stores, you have big investments in New York City. Is this a threat to you?
I think it's a threat to all New Yorkers. I think it's a threat to real estate industry in New York. And the real estate industry in New York has a problem, then the banks are going to have a problem.
Why don't they speak up? You have a radio show.
I am speaking up every day. Every day I am speaking up.
What about your friends?
They're all speaking up. I talked to Eric Adams yesterday. I worked with Curtis all morning this morning for 4 hours. Curtis is not going anywhere. He's going to stay in the race. And I talked to Eric Adams. He says, I haven't begun to fight yet. Remember, what did John Paul Jones say? I haven't begun to fight yet. He says, give me August, and then we'll see what happens in September. What I've been saying about Zoran is, remember that song with Andrew Yang just 4 years ago? Flying high in April, shot down in May.
Right.
Well, he doesn't have a... he's not really a business person, you know, and the fact is he can't run a $100 billion enterprise. What he's trying to do, Brian, is go to our friend Bill de Blasio, bring in some of his crew members to help run the city of New York and try to get some credibility from the Democratic Party.
But you know that
credibility.
But de Blasio ruined everything that Bloomberg did. And then he led us into a ditch.
But Zoran is looking at de Blasio as his hero, and maybe he even wants Bill Bratton, his police commissioner.
De Blasio and hero. I've never seen that combination of words.
That's unimaginable. By the way, you know, a lot of people are going to come around to Curtis Sliwa. For example, I had on my show the other night Elise Stefanik.
In fact, you want to hear from her? She talked about the economic impact from your show.
She was terrific.
Let's watch.
The world is watching this mayor's race. People, not just in this country, not just in this state, but around the world, watch what happens in the city of New York. So to have a full-blown communist, anti-Semite, defund the police mayor of New York, that is devastating to the city, to the state, to the nation, and frankly, to the financial markets.
She was fabulous. And
she will be governor.
She will be governor. If he wins, she'll be governor, and she will stop everything. And don't forget, even... in a year, if he wins, he's got to get his stuff through the state legislature and the governor It's a very bad Governor Hochul, and it's a left-wing legislature, but not as far left as he is. And you've got seasoned pros. Now, this is, I want to make, besides Elise Stefanik, okay, who's going to be out and about, former Governor George Pataki is helping Curtis Sliwa. Former Mayor Rudy Giuliani is helping Curtis Sliwa. I am doing whatever I can on the radio to help Curtis Sliwa. So it's early. John is right. You know, it may well turn out that Mandami the commie peaked the night he won the Democratic primary.
Okay, he hasn't yet. John, finally this. This is a time for Hakeem Jeffries, for Senator Schumer, for Dan Goldman, for Governor Hochul to endorse him or not. He's a Democrat. Well, what's the problem? He won the primary. They have to show whether they voted for him or not.
Dan Goldman is irrelevant. Yeah, you know, let's talk about Hakeem Jeffries. Let's talk about Senator Schumer. Let's talk about Governor Hochul. If they endorse this person, they're setting up the Democratic Party to lose 49 states in the future.
So make a decision, yes or no. So say it's no, I don't endorse him. You can't say nothing. Nothing is not an option.
They're setting up. Yeah. What happened to McGovern in the 1980s?
And that speaks volumes about
Speaks volumes.
I'm telling you, they won't come on. The media won't go up to Schumer and say, who did you vote for in the primary? Dog him, and he won't say. And John is right. There's a McGovernite landslide out there if this guy wins.
So only 49 states, but they'll try to increase it to 50 out of 50.
But Trump will be all over him. I just want to repeat
4 that. O'clock every single day. Fox Business.
Thank you, sir.
John Katsimatidis, WABC. You were smart enough to hire him on Saturday.
I listen to Larry Kudlow to find out what I'm going to say at 5 o'clock.
I work for him on the weekends.
I know. But you have direct deposit. I know that. I already know your routing number. All right, thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it. Up next, the media moments that matter with Jimmy Failla.
Our piece of ground, watching you watch the sun going down. That's what my world spins around.
The Chevy Equinox is more than...
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. Two men have been arrested in connection to the murders of 4 relatives of an infant in western Tennessee. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation charged 29-year-olds Tanika Brown and Giovanni Thomas with accessory after the fact to first-degree murder. Investigators allege they assisted 28-year-old Austin Robert Drummond, who is wanted in the murders and is still at large. The infant was found abandoned and alive in a car seat 40 miles away after the deaths of her parents, grandmother, and uncle. A volcano in Russia is erupting for the first time in 600 years. The volcano is spewing hot ash miles into the sky. It erupted on a far eastern peninsula while a 7.0 magnitude earthquake took place. It also comes after an 8.8 magnitude earthquake last week. Authorities say there are no populated areas near where the ash is falling. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, and I'm back to One Nation.
Media moments that matter.
My favorite segment of the week. It's the week where I just choose to take my only VCR and my TV guide. I have a subscription. All my cords and all my tapes, and I give it to one man. And this man this week, Jimmy Failla.
There he is.
Host of Fox News Saturday Night. Great radio show every single day from 12 to 3.
Let's go.
Jimmy, I gave you everything. You got to give it back. But first, what did you tape?
So here it is, because I really went nuts. And I don't appreciate that you give me the VCR, but you attach it to a cinder block, like the key to gas station. I'm going to run off with your VCR and sell it to some Amish family who knows what to do with it.
You're right.
Topic number one, kill me, here you go, just so I can give you back your VCR and get this over with. Nancy Pelosi blows up at Jake Tapper after he asks her about Donald Trump's insider trading allegations. Watch this. This is great.
Why do you have to read that? Here to talk about the 60th anniversary of Medicaid. That's what I agreed to come to talk about.
Yeah, he accused you of insider trading. What's your response to that?
That's ridiculous. In fact, I very much support the stop the trading of members of Congress. Not that I think anybody's doing anything wrong. If they are, they are prosecuted and they go to jail. Let's not give them any more time on that, please.
Clearly a woman with nothing to hide. What do you think of insider trading? Why do you got to talk about that? Brian, can you imagine me and you were driving home and a cop stops you and he goes, have you been drinking, sir? And you go, why do you have to talk about that? We're moving on here. Yeah. That's not how life works, Nancy.
Well, a couple of things are going on here. Jake Tapper can get bullied. She did the same. She does the things on CNN and MSNBC all the time. Yep. She gets mad at them. No wonder she doesn't do us.
Oh, no, never. Right. No. But I want her to come by because I want some of them stock tips.
Absolutely.
I'll throw some softballs
she's
up
worth
there.
Like $760 million.
That's
but,
what I mean.
But that's just her husband.
That's what yeah. I mean. Story number two. I love this one so much. Seth Meyers over at NBC worried about his mental health because if his late night show gets canceled.
Right.
You know, he knows late night shows are kind of in the ditch right now, and he's afraid he might have to go to therapy. Watch this.
Does it help that you know, like, if it ends tomorrow, financially you're fine? Like, safety-wise, does that help or not really because you are so driven?
Yeah, I would worry about myself, like, mental health-wise if I didn't fight. But again, like, you know, I put a lot of thought into, like, diversifying my skill set.
What is he saying? He worried about his mental health if he's canceled?
Nothing. And he has gone on to say, like, I'd have to go see a psychiatrist. That actually works for him, though, because he's gotten used to talking to an audience of one. Okay. There's actually a big crowd for him right. these days.
It's who's ever not Trump. But here's the thing. He had the worst thing. He gets a contract extension, but they say, we're taking your band. And yeah. I imagine the spread in the green room.
Yeah.
Like, little by little, it's over. But remember, they didn't replace James Corden.
No.
Right?
So, no, that's how this ends, too. I mean, he'll be, like, a producer at MSNBC or something. He'll
well, we'll see if there is one.
Yeah.
Did you tape anything else?
Yeah, I got one more. No, I'm excited. As the last one is the grand finale. We built up to this. Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Pamela Anderson. They got caught making out on the Today
what?
Show. They won't admit it. They're in a relationship. But we wanted to come to you because you are the expert on fake kisses. Let's take a look. Whoa! Whoa, that was back when they called the show Fox and Friends with Benefits.
Yeah, yeah, what is going on here? I forgot about that. But that was a fake kiss. Mm-hmm. So the question goes to you, Jimmy, because you're in Hollywood.
Yes.
Was that with Liam Neeson and Pam Anderson? Was that real?
You see, I think it was just a promo for The Naked Gun, which is coming out now.
Which, by the way, here is hysterical.
Yeah, I'm really excited to go watch it. That being said, she does have a reputation for getting close to some of the guys she's worked with. Here's a photo I can show you right now.
Oh, my God.
Oh, hold on, Kilmeade. What is even going on?
Now, what do you remember about that moment?
Everything.
So what are the circumstances?
I worked with her. It was a stand-up show called Gotham Comedy Live. Yeah. I used to be the celebrity monologue writer, so for a week, I got to write her monologue and bounce jokes off her for a week that she then went on stage and told.
Wow.
And she crushed. She got a standing ovation. I got a couple of threatening phone calls from my wife. It was a win-win. It was a win-win.
And you had her when she wore makeup.
Amen.
Those are the good ones.
Okay, I had her first, Liam Neeson. Yeah, taken back, if right. anything.
And by the way, Gotham Comedy Club, best comedy club.
Best in the city. Pound for pound.
Maybe best ever.
I'll take it.
All right. Jimmy, thanks so much. We're going to watch you. We watched you Saturday night, and we loved it.
You better.
All right. Different outfit, same guy. All right. Meanwhile, straight ahead on this show, you're welcome to stick around. From Ali to Foreman to Tyson, Hall of Fame sportscaster Jim Lampley has had the call for them all. Next, only on One Nation, he takes us behind the scenes of his illustrious career.
If you're like I was, you're tired.
There was a few hot spots about the fourth or fifth round when Michael Moore started hitting me a few times. I started to think, where's that fan who flies in and stops these things? I needed a rest or a break. Whenever you needed him, he wouldn't fly in. But other than that, I felt pretty confident all the way through.
And he was talking about Fan Man who flew into the Riddick Bowe Holyfield second fight that was in Las Vegas. But that was the late, great George Foreman, one of the greatest people you'll meet, reflecting on his shocking knockout of then heavyweight champion Michael Moore. At 45 years old, Big George became the oldest heavyweight champion in history, flattening the 26-year-old Moore in one of boxing's most unforgettable upsets. My next guest was ringside for that fight and for countless others during his legendary 30-year career on HBO Sports and beyond. He captures that moment and many more in his new memoir, named after that famous call after Foreman knocked him out when he said it happened, A Uniquely Lucky Life in Sports Television. Joining us now, Jim Lampley. Jim, great to see you. Tell the audience why it was important to name the book after that call on that moment.
Well, thank you, Brian, and thanks for the opportunity to connect with your audience. George Foreman, a great man, a brilliant man. I can tell that you know that about him. A lot of people give me curious looks when I tell them that, but he was extraordinary in terms of his understanding of his relationship to the public and his understanding of what would happen in a prize fight. And you know now, because you read the book, that in the weeks leading up to the fight between the 45-year-old Foreman and the 26-year-old unbeaten southpaw Michael Moore, I asked him several times at HBO functions, because we were working together on the commentary team, George, how are you going to beat Michael Moore? He's unbeaten. He's 26 years old. He has fast feet and a southpaw style. Holyfield couldn't find him, and Holyfield is much quicker and more adept on his feet than you are. What's the plan? And every time I asked, George would look me in the eye and say, Jim, you watch. There will come a moment late in the fight when he will come and stand in front of me and let me knock him out. Always the same words. He will come and stand in front of me and let me knock him out. Now, I recommend to your viewers, go to YouTube, dial up round 10 of Foreman versus Moore, November 5, 1994, and tell me there's any more accurate description of what you see on the screen than exactly what George said was happening. And you know, it was an overwhelming holy grail for him. He walked to the ring that night wearing the same shorts he had worn against Ali and Zaire 20 years before. Gotcha. And reciting the words to the impossible dream as he walked to the ring. To, you know, to dream the impossible dream, to climb the unbearable climb, et cetera. He was very geared up for that night, and he got right. what he wanted and became the oldest heavyweight champion ever. And I, looking for something to say about it, remembered what he'd said to me and said, it happened, it happened. Right. And because it's concise, because it was concrete, it became my most famous boxing call.
I also think your career... your career is so learned. Even if you don't want a broadcasting career, there are ups and downs, and how you handle that really matters. But if you want to know your passion for boxing, it was clear early because you had a passion for boxing. You asked your mom to drop you off, and she did at the Cassius Clay Liston fight. Everyone thought Liston was going to crush him. What did that, in retrospect, what did that fight mean to you, seeing one of the greatest upsets ever and one of the greatest athletes to ever walk the planet in Muhammad Ali?
He was my most admired hero at the time for a variety of reasons. And it was deeply emotional for me. I had saved lawn mowing and car washing money for months to buy a ticket that in my memory was either $100 or $150. I don't know for sure because stupidly I didn't save it. in those days, you couldn't do that. You're showing a picture of Muhammad later babysitting my daughter in 1988 on a day when he spent many hours with her, showing her card tricks and magic tricks and things of that nature to occupy her time while I was emceeing a boxing writer's dinner in New York. This is perhaps the single most treasured moment of my entire life, that my 8-year-old daughter could spend all those hours with Muhammad and get to know him. And as the book elucidates, right. on the ride home uptown in Manhattan from Trump's hotel on 34th Street to her mother's apartment uptown on Madison Avenue, right. she asked me in the back of a darkened cab, who was that man? And I said, well, you're going to grow up. You're going to read about him. You're going to learn right. about all of that. Hey. But I'll begin with one fact. He's the most famous man in the world. And it's indisputable. No one can make any logical claim that there's someone else who's more famous than him. She said, Dad, you mean I just spent 8 hours with the most famous man in the world? And I said, yes, you did. And he liked you. And he cared about you. And that's why it happened.
I am jealous of Joe Rogan because he had you for 3 hours. I have one more. One more topic for you. I mean, to recount it as special, especially to the parents out there at home. You had an event in Atlanta you wanted to take away where you didn't maybe give proper deference to Hannah Storm. The network got mad at you, and they go to send you to a minor event. I believe it was cheerleading competition, we assume as punishment. And you're bummed out, and you called Jack Nicholson. And I think people can learn from this story. What did he tell you that really helped you for the rest of your life, certainly that day?
I wondered who it was who could tell me something to help me out of the trough of deep, self-rebuke and negative emotion that came from what I had stupidly done in Atlanta and the potential implications for my career. I went up to Jack's house and visited him on Mulholland Drive, because actors never know whether the movie is going to bomb or whether the public's going to like it. They don't know for sure. So they have momentary ups and downs in their career, and they have to deal with it emotionally. And I asked Jack, you know, how am I going to get through this? I may have destroyed my relationship with NBC. And Jack told me two things that saved my career. Number one, no small actors, only small parts. If they send you, as they're sending you now to cover the cheerleading championships, your job is to be the greatest cheerleading commentator of all time. Number two, longevity is lovability. The longer you can hang around and stay in front of the public, the more they will decide that they like you and everything is going to turn out right. And those two things were absolutely correct, and he saved my career.
Wow. Part of the great Jim Lampley story. Jim, thanks so much for recounting it for us. I look forward to talking to you again. Jim Lampley, he's not finished yet. He's just chronicling what he did. Thanks so much, Jim.
We'll go together to Rogan and use those 3 hours. Thank you, Brian.
That'll
talk
be great.
To you later.
You got it. Up next, a sneak peek at the week ahead. And don't forget, follow me on social media, Rumble, Instagram, X, and Facebook. Also, in the Culper Club, we had a special insert from Lawrence and Carly this week. You'll love it.
We're here with Chris Cooney.
I only have time for a sneak peek of the week. You ready? Two former Biden aides will appear behind closed doors for interviews on Biden's mental decline. I guess we're still a mystery to some. Envoy Steve Witkoff expected to travel to Russia ahead of the August 8th deadline for him to come to the grips with a ceasefire. Let's hope it happens. And in football, first full week of preseason games. Man, it feels like summer's coming to an end. That's it for us tonight. Be sure to tune in to radio 9 to noon every single day. BrianKilmeadShow.com. Fox and Friends every single day in a few hours from 6 to 9, unless we want to go over. My last message to you is simple. Stay within yourself. And keep it right here on Fox News. Now watch this. Just a country boy with a farmer's tan. So help me, girl, I'll be
your pickup man. I've got a night to remember and a bed to go. This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.